Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 10. I am Mo, I'm here with Elle.
Hey, how's it going?
And the reason there's a pause there is because Luke's back. Hello, Luke.
Hey, I am back.
How you doing?
I'm very well.
I barely know you anymore. You've been 3 weeks having the loveliest adventure across the planet.
Yeah, it was a lovely, lovely time. But obviously, I'd trade it all in to be here for the podcast.
Yeah, which is fuck.
I'm back.
Yeah, if that was true, you would have been here last week.
Yeah, wow. Luke. What else?
Sorry.
It's been a busy, busy week. We've got a lot to rattle through. Don't forget that Golden Gods voting is still open as we speak. Very, very close in some of the categories at the moment. I'm not just saying that to push more voting. It is legit going to be a real contest heading into the awards themselves on June 11th at the Indigo. We've got Jamie Jester hosting, of course, and we will be announcing some absolutely killer names that will be playing very, very soon.
It's going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be ridiculous. Keep an eye on metalhammer.com for ticket info. We will be releasing all that information very, very soon. And, of course, the current issue of Metal Hammer is on sale as well. You've got two options for the cover this month. You can either pick up the Metal Hammer tour cover featuring Trivium, Code Orange, Power Trip and Venom Prison, four absolutely killer bands, or you can pop along to Tesco and get the special Iron Maiden Seventh Son of a Seventh Son 30th anniversary issue.
It's 30 years old today years old as today. We record this.
As we record this on Wednesday, 30th anniversary, happy birthday to what in my opinion is the greatest Maiden album ever. So
it's hard to disagree.
Thank you.
Why aren't we having cake?
Yeah. Maiden, send us cake, fuck's sake. Elle, you went to Rollo Tomassi this past week, how was that?
Oh, amazing. Yeah, they played The Garage, which is a venue in London, and they came on and opened it with new material, and the basically just aftermath into Rituals sounded incredible.
Wow.
Just that kind of spacey vibe, going into those sort of dark, twisted chords, and then a lot of noise. It was just really good. I think Rollo Tomassi are one of those bands that always play good shows, and I wish they'd get a bit more. They've got a lot of recognition, but I wish we could get them into bigger venues. You know, I wish more people could sort of come to them and see how good they are. Because
I mean, the numbers on the streaming for the new album and stuff like that have been the best they've ever had. So hopefully, there is a breakthrough. I mean, sounds silly to be saying that about a band 10 years in.
No, they're 10 years in. Yeah.
Hopefully, there is a kind of movement for them at the moment.
And I think if any record is going to get more people in the door, hopefully it's the new one because it's so good.
Mm-hmm. It's their best one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of peaks and troughs. And the thing about them as well is just you sort of feel it in your body. You know, you feel the music actually inside. And the way Eva moves is kind of, you know, sort of similar thing. You can tell that she feels it too. And I think they were just really chuffed to be there at the weekend. The reception was really good. So just hoping they get to some bigger venues.
Awesome.
I think
absolutely backed. And don't forget, they are in fact nominated in the Best British Brand category in the Metal Hammer Golden Gods Awards, so you can vote for them. Go do it right now if you like that band, which you definitely should. Shit tons of stuff happening in the metal world this week. Ghost have finally started to unveil some shit that's going to be going into their next album. What were we saying about Cardinal Capia?
Copia?
Copia? I tried to make it sound more Latin, but
copia as in cornucopia. Copia as in, I don't know.
Let's just call him the Cardinal. Yeah. What do we think of him?
Yeah. Big Cardinal.
What do we think of this drastic departure for a Ghost frontman, really? No. I mean, we've got Papa Neil kind of hanging out in the background there, like the older dude overseeing everything in the videos and stuff like that. But
this guy
is not a Papa Emeritus.
He looks like more of a minion type character than the sort of grand overlord that Papa
I thought you
Emeritus
meant like the cartoon.
Not the Despicable Me minion. But I don't know, I think he looks cool. I don't know, I don't understand where they're going with it.
It seems to have a sense of humour though, which is cool. Like in the clip when Papa Neil's a bit like, oh, don't really know about that, and the Cardinal, like you said, is sort of a bit like a minion, but also sort of seems to have a bit of a sense of humour.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be cool.
Interesting. And it sounds like there's a new single or something similar just about to drop.
Yeah, it's a 30-second clip of the song Rats.
Rats.
As I don't know that was
just as good that was
just joking,
sure.
It's appeared on the internet, and it's hard to make much of a 30 second clip, but
I'm excited.
Ghost is going to be Ghost.
I'm excited.
Great.
Like one of the only bands left that have a genuine air of mystique about them, and if you like what you hear, when that new music finally drops, you're going to be wanting to pay very, very close attention to MetalHammer.com over the coming couple of weeks. That's all I'll say on that for now. What else is going on? Something else that you're very excited about, I imagine, Luke?
Well, the new Slipknot album is, you know, taking shape. Corey Taylor has said that the lyrics are nearly finished for the new Slipknot album.
Come on.
Come on. Like you said, he told a Billboard...
You mean Billboard?
Did I say the Billboard?
You said he told a Billboard.
Just went up to a Billboard.
Not US, not US music site Billboard, just went up and started shouting.
As I said, the guys are writing tons of music and I've written lyrics to almost all of it, and we're going to start trying to put together demos here and there with the time off that I have, and really try to get ahead of the curve as far as what happens next.
Ooh. This is a story a few weeks back, though, wasn't it, that he was writing? So is this new story that he's finished writing?
Yeah, basically,
so it's
finished.
Like an update.
And they're going to try and put the album out next year.
Wow. Awesome.
What are they going to write about, Luke?
I don't know. Shit that's happened? I don't know. You know, the last one obviously had a lot of connotations with built into it, with obviously Paul's death and things. But I don't imagine a lot has happened since then to write about, but I can't imagine they're all
Corey happy. Taylor is not a man that, you know, is short of words.
No, exactly. He has an opinion or two. Yeah, and it's Clown's probably not happy.
He rarely is. He's doing a lot of stuff on Instagram, isn't he, at the moment? He's just kind of putting some interesting stuff out there. I don't know if it's connected to Slipknot. Probably not, if they're still this far off actually getting in the studio together. But he's definitely, I don't know, I get the feeling he's got kind of, what's the phrase, itchy feet? No.
Itchy feet's a thing.
Itchy feet, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's wanting to do something.
He's wanting to do something. Good. The way you looked at me then, I was like, oh, I said something stupid. He's like, it looks like he's kind of getting a bit restless and starting to put some conceptual ideas together.
Well, that's it, I think, yeah, because Clown did, what's his name, Officer Down, is the last big artistic thing he's done, but he's not really had, like, in the same way that Corey's got Stone Sour, you've not seen Clown do anything as musically.
Not on that level.
Since the last
I'm sure in the last Hammer cover feature, Clown was saying he wanted to move forward and do it now, and Corey was saying he wanted to take time out. So I think there's long been a conflict, hasn't there, in that respect.
Interesting. Well, we will have to wait and see. What the hell else is going on?
Well, System of a Down teased some dates and then announced they're playing. Is it three or four dates?
I think a few more than that now.
A handful on the
West Coast, I think it is, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah, US states they're playing, so they're making a big deal about that on Twitter.
Yeah, let
so
down.
Who knows? Yeah, I think a lot of people thought it was going to be new music.
They hashtagged System of a Down 2018 on that first post. Now, I don't care if that technically is 2018 stuff that they're doing. You do not do that if you don't have new music.
It's a big build up for a tour, wasn't it?
It's literally the let's get festivals. Some more money so we don't have to get in a studio together dates. Exactly. I imagine.
They're all festivals, right?
No, they've announced. They're headlining Aftershock, and then they've announced an all-dayer with Incubus and Paul Bearer and Clutch and a few others, and then like two other dates with At the Drive-In and Skeleton Witch, which is an odd bill.
That's an odd bill, but a cool bill. I do like Skeleton Witch. Yeah. See At the Drive-In speak for themselves.
But yeah, like we say about the hashtags, they put, what was it, hashtag System Down 2018, then hashtag Let's Do This. You're sort of like, oh, what's it going to be? Oh, it's a gig in California.
So, I
wicked.
Mean, like, when you look at where they've gone since the initial, I guess, reunion. Around the time they played Reading in 2014, I think it was, or 13 maybe?
Yeah.
The one Eminem and Green Day played, that mental lineup they had
a few years ago.
They were amazing that year, absolutely brilliant, one of the best bands of the weekend. They then came back, I think, the following year and did Wembley Arena. I played another amazing gig. Everyone was raving about it.
Was that the one they did like 30 songs? Was that the Armenian?
Yeah, the Armenian, the genocide justice thing.
Yeah, it was amazing, actually. I think we went to that, didn't we?
Yeah,
exactly.
It was amazing.
And at that point, it was like, System of a Down are back. Like, we are ready for new music. Come on, this has got to be the time we get a new album.
It felt really
now.
Exciting, didn't it?
Exactly.
That one.
But since then, the last time they headlined Download, which was it last year?
Last year, wasn't it?
I mean, when you're a band that is that tight musically and has that many great songs, it's hard to not enjoy a live show. But I did feel like it was lacking enough to make me go, I'm not convinced these guys really want to be here. And I don't know if I really want... I don't know what I want out of System of a Down anymore, basically. I don't know if I want a new album. Do you want a new System of a Down album?
I do.
I do, yeah.
Yeah?
Because it could be amazing. Like, I'd rather have something than nothing. If they put out an album and I don't like it, then I don't like it. But they might put one out that I think is amazing.
Don't you bring that sensible line of thought into this?
Well, that is my line of thought. And if you don't like it, then you can suck it up.
Oh, I don't have to listen to things I don't want.
Whatever.
You're right.
Because what's the worst that can happen?
And if they've tarnished their legacy, that's what. They've never put out a bad album. And it would break my heart if they all just...
I think it's
and shit,
wrong
you know?
When you said I never put out a bad album. Like, I was not very into Steal this album.
That was a B-side album, though.
Yeah, but it was still an album. And I thought...
And it still slammed.
Hypnotise was a bit weak.
Oh, I love Hypnotise.
Nah, my name.
Mesmerise was better.
Yeah, I like... Which one was the first one?
Mesmerise was the first one.
I like them both the same. I think the standout songs on Mesmerise are better, but I think some of the melodies... on like Lonely Mountain and some of those songs are just the best melodies ever. Like the vocal melodies between Serge and Darren are the best they've ever sounded.
So if you really like the last album they did, why wouldn't you want one now?
Because that was 13 years ago and I've seen System probably 4 times since then, and I've seen them be I wasn't at the Wembley show, but I've seen them be genuinely brilliant once in all that time, and every other time I've been a bit like going through the motions.
I don't know how their writing process works. I mean, Serge has done...
Isn't the rumour that Serge is the one that doesn't want to do stuff? That's
loads of solo albums, and he can obviously write songs. When they do System songs, I don't know who the main songwriter is, whether they all do it or...
Well, I think it's a fairly collaborative effort, but obviously Darren's the one that's smashing out the riffs for everything. And from what... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure whenever they've properly talked about it, it's generally been a case of... most of them are up for it. Serge isn't quite so keen, I think. I might be wrong about that, but I don't know.
I don't think you can judge whether you want a new album or not based on how good they are live, though, really. Like, there's a lot of metal bands I've seen lately who've been pretty shocking live, but their latest album's been great. I've not seen Mastodon be good in quite a while.
That's different, though. That's a band who have always been up and down live and are suited to certain environments.
Yeah, I'm talking
about a band who... don't want to be doing this anymore, and they're doing it just to make money and tick boxes.
You're talking about like a chemistry thing, like a lack of chemistry almost, because they could still get mechanically into a room, and they're still talented and capable of writing something. But you think kind of if the vibe isn't there, if the intent isn't there, if the chemistry isn't there, it's not going to come out very well.
I just don't want a System of a Down on autopilot putting out a 6 out of 10 album with an all right catchy song on it and a lot of filler. It's just that would be a heartbreaker for me, because to me they're one of the greatest metal bands of all time.
But I don't think they want to do that either, though. They're a very credible band, and everything they do has been what they want to do. I don't think they're a band that ever just going to do anything for the money. Like, admittedly, they headline a download and look like, well, 3 of the 4 of them look like they didn't really want to be there.
Charvo wants that album, man. Yeah. He's ready. Yeah. He's ready.
But yeah, I can't see them just going, oh, we've got to go into the studio and write 10 songs because we have to. I can't see them ever doing that. They'd only do it if the timing was right.
And actually, when we were talking about this earlier, one thing that did come to mind is that I thought that I can't remember if it was the rest of the band, if it was just Darren, but the song they did with Linkin Park, or with Chester, that came on that Linkin Park album, Rebellion, that is a massive song. And I think if that had Serge over it as well, no disrespect for Chester, one of the greatest vocalists of all time, but as it's a System vibe, if that had Serge over it as well, I think it would have been an even better song. So there is evidence out there in the last few years that they could still do it. And fucking hell, man, literally one of my favourite bands. I would like nothing more than to have my face rubbed in it by brilliant System of a Down.
If they wrote an album and you came into work and it was in a sealed envelope on your desk, you're going to open the envelope and listen to it.
Well, yeah,
you?
I would just chuck it out the window.
It's better to have something than nothing.
I don't know. I'm one of those picky little twats.
Yeah, I'd rather not have a bad album, obviously, but...
To compare this to movies, I'd rather Batman vs. Superman had never been made than what we got. And this is the Batman vs. Superman of post-new metal.
Fucking hell.
Wow, okay.
That on the sticker of the album.
Right, I'm not sure where to go now.
That's what I'm getting at. I don't know. I'm being too protective, I suppose. You're quite right. If they want to do it, they should do it.
But
if they don't want to do it, why haven't they done it yet?
Watch all your other Batman films.
Yeah, true.
See, the thing is,
why haven't they done it yet, then?
I don't think they do want to do it. Like, there's no reason... There's nothing to stop them doing it. Like, it's been 13 years, which is a long, long time to not put an album out. Maybe they just don't want to. Maybe they like...
Which is fine.
Which is fine, yeah. But they know everyone wants one. They must know how much everyone wants one.
I think,
except for you.
No, it's not that I don't want one. It's that I was gagging for one when they came back 5 years ago or whatever it was, and blew everyone away.
But yeah, they were talking about it then.
They were on such good form then. Why do you not bottle that and get it into a studio? What's made them decide? Mm. You know, because even 5 years is a long time. And that was since we were all saying they're back, let's get an album out of them.
When they were saying that they, I think there were quotes at the time of them saying that they're working on new stuff, or they want to work on new stuff.
I was convinced we were getting it last year when they did that tour. I was like, there's no way they're just going to come to download and do all that again without new music. And they did.
Yeah.
So there you go. We'll see. Anyway, please do come back and do a good album. That's what everyone wants.
New album and tour, please.
Absolutely. There is a new Bruce Dickinson documentary coming out. Screen for Me Sarajevo is in select cinemas on April 17th. It's an amazing period in his life that it kind of follows and documents, that anyone that's read his really, really cool autobiography that dropped last year? Yeah, it was last year now, wasn't it? God, where's the time going? What Does That Button Do book that came out last year kind of ran over this. And it's about the time that Bruce and his solo band at the time, during his time away from Iron Maiden, ended up playing in an actual literal war zone. It looks like an absolutely fascinating piece of film. As I say, it's out in select cinemas on April 17th. And we got Iron Maiden mega fan and the Metal Hammer legend Dom Lawson to give us a special lowdown of the movie and what it's all about. We're going to throw to that right now.
Hello, it's Dom Lawson here from Metal Hammer magazine. Checking in to tell you about the new film Scream for Me Sarajevo, which I'm currently standing in the foyer of View in Leicester Square, which is a modern thing they have nowadays. And the film is basically about a gig that Bruce Dickinson performed in the centre of Sarajevo in 1994 at the height of the conflict between, well, whoever it was between. It's very complicated. It's a long time ago. But basically, Sarajevo was under siege, and somehow Bruce managed to get into the city and perform a show with his then solo band at a couple of years before the Skunk Works album. And anyway, this film tells the story of Bruce and how they managed to play the gig. But more importantly, it tells the story of the people of Sarajevo and the metalheads of Sarajevo. And I guess how music became an important part of their lives during the most hideous and mind-blowingly awful period in their city's history. And I've seen the film, and it's incredibly powerful, to be honest. It's it's quite traumatic, really, and I think it shows you a lot about what it's like to be an ordinary person in a supposedly developed part of the world and yet having to exist in the most intolerable conditions. And it's also a film about how important music is to people and the power of, dare I say it, the power of heavy metal to make people feel better about their lives when they're, you know, literally staring down the barrel of a gun on a daily basis. So if you're a fan of Iron Maiden, which obviously you are, because that would be weird if you weren't, or a fan of Bruce Dickinson solo stuff, which is used heavily in the film as a soundtrack, and even if you're just a human being, I suggest that you check this film out, because it's, I don't know, I think it's one of the most important music-based documentary stroke movies I've seen ever, really, because it says so much about the importance of music and the importance of freedom and how we shouldn't take our freedom in the West for granted. And the fact that we can ponce around being heavy metal people without any repercussions other than, you know, people saying get your hair cut hippie and shit like that. I recommend it to you highly. And Luke's looking at me now, so I think I'm waffling. So I'll go away. Goodbye.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah. Well, Eleanor and I are going to go see it tonight, actually. There's a fancy little screening this evening.
Hell yes.
For sport journalists like us to go and watch.
You can hear more about that and what we make of it next week on this very, very podcast. We're going to move on to a new feature now, where we take a new band that is featured in each issue of Metal Hammer and talk a little bit about them and why we've decided to put them in the issue, all about promoting new music here on the Metal Hammer podcast and in the magazine. And this month we're going to talk about Louise L'Amour, who we've been playing a shit ton of in the office, haven't we, Al?
Oh, so much. Yeah.
So much. Kind of the new face of death gospel, as it has been called. She's a Swedish singer-songwriter, very much in the vein of Chelsea Wolfe, Anna von Hauswolf, Merk here, that kind of really eerie, witchy kind of vibe going on with her. She went and recorded her debut album, which is called Purge, with Randall Dunn, who recorded with the likes of Sun and Earth. And it's just an absolutely haunting, beautiful piece of work, isn't it?
It's really dark, but it totally chills me out. or it just totally chills me out when I put it on. Just kind of gets me into, well, Jonathan Seltzer would say it's probably a hypnotic state or something
it
similar.
Is.
Like that transcendent hypnotic state.
Very much carries you to another plane of existence.
It does, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. We have a really interesting interview with her in the current issue of Hammer, written by Natasha Schaff, which is very, very cool. She talks about how she went and recorded this record in what she genuinely believed was a haunted cabin in the woods. So you can take that as you will. But it created a lot of strange atmospherics that really bred themselves into the record, which for my money is one of the best debut albums of 2018 so far. It's an absolute stormer. So go check out Purge. It's out right now on Spotify and various other physical formats. And then pick up the new issue to read more about Louise Lemon. She's really, really cool, and we think she's going to be a big name in that scene for sure. Now, what have the wonderful people of the Metal Hammer Facebook group, Metal Hammer Readers Facebook group, I should clarify, I've been asking us. Important distinction there.
Well, Craig Huntley has asked, it's quite a good question this, what band which Metal Hammer have championed or put on the cover have never reached their full potential / crossed over into the mainstream, in your opinion?
There's one answer that came straight to mind for me, that is Upon and Burning Body, who I think are one of... If someone asked me what's the most unfortunate kind of career trajectory we've had out of a lot of the bands we've really pushed at Hammer, I'd probably go straight to them. On the original Matt Hammer podcast, we were behind them in such a massive way. We nominated them for a Golden God. We actually had them on a cover alongside of Mice and Men and While She Sleeps, two bands that have kind of gone on to do great things on various levels since then. And I genuinely believe that they were one of the most exciting young bands in the game at the time. I still think they're a fantastic band. I've liked pretty much everything they've done. But when they released Red, White and Green, which was the second album that came out in around 2012, I want to say, they were one of the best live bands going. I remember them absolutely obliterating Shepherd's Bush Empire on tour with Trivium. They did an amazing set of Slam Dunk. And I think they played Download 1 year as well. And I genuinely thought that they were a band with all the tools to become an absolutely massive name. You know, they had the suits and stuff on stage, which was very gimmicky, but really worked and just made them look badass. And then came the kidnapping thing.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Which,
as you were talking, I was like, what happened to the... Oh,
that's
yeah.
what happened. So if anyone isn't aware of this, Upon and Burning Body, Mexican-Texan band that played a mixture of like Pantera groove metal with flashes of deathcore and all sorts of stuff. Really, really cool. So in 2014, ahead of the release of their album The World Is My Enemy Now, they did this publicity stunt where they posted something on Facebook saying that frontman Danny Lille had been kidnapped, and anyone with the relevant I think they specifically said he disappeared. That was it. He's disappeared. Anyone with relevant information, please report to local police thing. Now, normally when a band is going to try something like this, we might get a heads up about it or something like that.
Yeah.
Just to say, like, just so you know, this is going to happen. They're going to try something. You might
keep an eye on their Facebook.
Yeah, keep an eye on their Facebook, all that kind of shit. We had no idea what the hell was going on. And I messaged someone who had been working their PR at the time. I messaged some friends of theirs. They had no idea this was going to happen at all. And so everyone was really freaked about it. We actually ran a story saying Upon and Burning Body front man's gone missing, blah 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 blah. Anyway, I think within a couple of days someone at Sumerian realised this was a terrible idea, and the whole thing got shit canned. They came out and talked about what it was all about, and it turns out it was a big publicity stunt, because I think the first video that came off The World Is My Enemy Now had a kind of kidnap theme on it or something.
Yeah, I seem to remember that.
Anyway, did not go down well with the metal industry. And they just kind of never really bounced back from that, I don't think.
No.
They still come over and play shows sometimes. I never really think that they put the graft in outside of America like they should have anyway. But I think when their last album, which was Straight From The Barrio, came out in 2016, I remember I was sitting in the office and I didn't know it was even out until it was already out. I had no idea.
Yeah, no one seemed to care about it at all. Like, not even in the office, I mean, like the public at large. Like, no one was talking about that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure people cared massively at the time before the kidnapping. I remember seeing them on stage. I can't remember who they were supporting, whether it was Trivium or someone else. And some people were just kind of laughing at them, like almost just kind of going, who are these guys? They're in suits. They've got these like beat downs, similar lyrics. Like, I really like Straight From The Barrier, that last one.
No, but I think Straight From This Is It. It's a great album.
There's a lyric that goes, guess how many fucks I give? 3, 2, 1
Yeah, it's an awesome lyric.
And yeah, they're a fun band.
Come on, we're new metal kids. We can't get snobby about that stuff.
I'm not saying I'm snobby about it. I'm saying they're a fun band, but I do think there are people, even before that kidnapping, that just kind of went, who are these losers? Like, who are these people with stupid lyrics, like, being really serious about it in suits? And I think they were dismissed by quite a lot of people as a joke, to be honest.
I think absolutely they were. And, you know, bearing in mind, they were a very young band anyway. They were a new band. We put them on the cover because it was a new band cover. They weren't a band that we thought were going to play Brixton Academy in a year. But not to make the comparison on where they would have gone. But I'm sure people laughed at Slipknot when they first played Ozfest. Do you know what I mean? Like, they absolutely had a gimmick, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't have been held up to scrutiny. But in terms of a band that, you know, they were playing bigger and bigger shows, like their streams were doing amazing numbers, they were getting loads of fans around the world, and it felt like there was something there that had real potential, and I don't think the potential was ever really realised. Maybe it wouldn't have been anyway. You never know, do you? But I certainly don't think
it didn't do them any favours.
No, it didn't do them any favours, and I don't think they came close to even realising it in the end. Because at the very least, I think they should have been a band that by the time Straight From The Barrier came out, we should have all been like, yeah, there's a new album out, and we didn't even know it existed. Which sucks. But for what it's worth, I still think they're an absolutely wicked band, and I thought Straight From The Barrier is really good.
Mm.
And I hope that they come back and do what they do. I think they've dropped the suits now as well, which is interesting.
Okay.
Don't think they do all that anymore. So we shall see. Still a kick-ass band. Hopefully they can still kind of make something magical happen down the road. Elle's got one. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, for me, it'd be Of Mice and Men, because obviously we put them on the cover ahead of Cold World, which I think, personally speaking, I really love Restoring Force. And when I heard Pain from Cold World, I thought this is going to be amazing.
Yeah,
I do really like Cold World, just kind of not as much because I think it is a little bit less heavy. But anyway, it just didn't take off as much as people thought. And I think there were some industry factors at play there, and also obviously Austin cancelling shows, and now he's left and they've done Defy, and you know they're still kind of carrying on and doing their thing and that's still fine, but I don't know, for me personally it's never quite gone where I thought it would. I think if Austin had stayed and they'd kind of been able to do some more shows with him, they would have got bigger and they would have got a bit more traction there, whereas now they kind of seem to be at a point where they're not getting any bigger, maybe they're not getting any smaller, they're just kind of in the same sort of position.
I think the album the album that they just released without Austin did pretty well.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, actually, I did see them at Download on the main stage, and it was better than I thought it was going to be without Austin.
Yeah, but they can still play together, they've still got a chemistry with each other.
I mean, I think that The Flood is still the best thing that Mice and Men ever done, personally. I loved that album. I think it still stands up as one of the best albums from that period. But yeah, they're not, I guess, yeah. Always hard when you lose a front man at a crucial point of your career, isn't it?
My choice, I guess, would be Suicide Silence, who, you know, you mentioned the loss of a front man, obviously hindering success, which, you know, Mitch dying obviously did, but then You Can't Stop Me was wicked.
Yeah.
Everyone was on board with
amazing
that album.
Amazing album.
Yeah, and I saw them headline Ghostfest, I think, on that album, and everyone was going insane for it. I think the subsequent tour did really well, and then they released the last set of records, and everything went bums.
Yeah.
Oh, Luke.
No, because I think you were there. I don't know if you were there when they played London on that album, and no one turned up.
Coco, they played. Yeah. Yeah, no, it was pretty sparse. And I think the worst thing about all that was that the new songs actually sounded pretty cool live as well.
Yeah, I was really surprised how much I was into it. Like,
I still don't think the album's, it's not that it's aged badly, it's just that my opinion's not changed on it.
No, I've not listened to it in a long, long time.
It was a shame because morally, I really stood with them for what they did on that album. They just went, you know what, fuck you. Like, we're not going to bow to preconceptions. We're not going to stick to a formula. We're going to go out and make an album that we want to make and try and experiment. And, you know, it didn't work, but I guess it remains to be seen what the long-term thing of that was. They'd be the first to admit that it, you know, they took a kicking for it.
Yeah, yeah, completely. Like, I say fans and industry and everyone was sort of like, what the hell have you done?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just a shame. I mean, I'm a fan of theirs, and, you know, seeing what they did when Eddie joined, it was like, wow, this band could be even bigger than before. This is going to be amazing. And yeah, and now it just feels like, oh, okay, you're going to have to fight quite hard
Very
now
hard.
To get back to where you were.
I did an interview with Eddie alongside Jamie from Code Orange and Ben from the Dillinger Escape Plan that we did in our Hammer 300 last year, our big kind of panel State of the Nation address. And it was really interesting to hear what Eddie had to say about that album a year on and where it kind of left Suicide Silence at the time. And you can still go and read that on the website right now, actually. So if you go and look up those three names, you can go see what they all had to say about it. Because, yeah, you've got to take risks in this game. And sometimes they don't quite work out as people would have liked.
Ziplang asks, has social media screwed up the mythos of the rock star now that we can interact with these icons as real people?
It's a great question.
It is a good question. And yes.
Okay. I think it's mixed. Like, obviously there's some big personalities, there's still some people who aren't on there at all. Like Avenged Sevenfold aren't on there at all.
Two of them are on Twitter, but not really.
And
they're not on it. I don't know what M. Shadows have for breakfast this morning, for instance.
No.
And some people are on it, but just like a little bit. So there's degrees of it, really.
Completely. But I think in terms of people hear the word rock star and they think of, you know, some people think of different things. But I mean, you know, growing up, reading, you know, before the internet was such a big thing, you would have to wait a week to find out, or a month before you find out what your favourite band was up to. Now, I know what Nurgle is doing every day. I know what Corey Taylor is doing every day.
I think it's a mixed bag, isn't it? Like, because if you're talking about the mystique, it definitely tears down some of the mystique for sure. But I just think it depends on the band, like I said. Like, in Nurgle's case, it definitely does kind of dent the scariness of him for a bit, for want of a better word, as that character.
Yeah.
When you see Adam Darski just kind of doing yoga and whatever. And
yeah, I don't begrudge him for it at all, but like, I think it's cool to see, but it isn't like...
But in his case, I think if he didn't do that, I don't... Like, to me, the Behemoth album that's going to come this year is one of the most important and exciting albums in metal, and I think it's going to be a landmark example of just how big an extreme metal band can get. And I don't think Behemoth would be about to hit critical mass like I feel like they are if he wasn't doing all that, because he's kind of placed himself in that pantheon now of like the Randy Blythes and the Corey Taylors, and like he is a personality in our world. And so in that case, I think it's worked for him because you feel a bit more of a personal connection to him. And when he's up on stage, he still looks like a badass, and he's, you know, if you ever see Nurgle walk through a room, like, dude's a rock star.
Like, yeah completely,
like, regardless, like, he just exudes it. Whereas, you know, we just talked about Ghost, Tobias Forge, who's the kind of man behind what goes on in Ghost world, he's managed to kind of be outed as that guy, and yet there's, you know, we sit here and we still don't have a fucking clue what's going on with Ghost.
Completely. And like you say about Nurgle, just because, you know, he's not, you know, everything he does on, you know, social media is sort of, you know, in inverted commas, on brand. It's not like he's doing anything outlandish and stupid that's going to damage Behemoth in any way.
True.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm glad Lemmy didn't have an Instagram account. It would have probably just ruined it a bit. It's like, with Jack of Coke, lads.
Yeah, live streaming playing the pinball machine.
It's on Twitch.
Yeah, totally.
Mate, imagine. Callum Dearman asks, how do you feel about in the future watching gigs through VR in your own home? I'm not into that. I'm really down for sitting with a live DVD, or if it's a live show you're streaming, maybe with some mates and like having a beer and just enjoying watching the gig. But I don't think I'd want to have a headset and pretend I'm in a mosh pit. Not Ready Player One, but a gig.
I'm into it in a certain set of circumstances. I'm not into it as a replacement for a gig, but I do like watching other gigs on YouTube, or, you know, things that I haven't seen, and to then put on a VR headset and for it to be like augmented, I wouldn't be against that. I play games on VR, like one where you have to dispose a bomb and you've got like a VR headset on, and you have to tell people outside the VR headset, like, well, they have to tell you from a manual, like, which wires to cut and stuff. And
so
they're it's quite stressful. But it's quite good. Like, VR games are good fun, and I've played some that make you really feel like you're there, and, you know, so I think you can have something from that experience, but I'd still rather actually go somewhere if that's an option.
I think it all depends on the gig. Like, I wouldn't trade it for, you know, oh, I could just go down the road to watch whatever band at the Underworld, or I'll sit on my sofa. But if it's, like, a one-off gig that's only happening once, and obviously I can't get tickets because it'll probably be in America, but someone says, oh, but you can watch it here, like, yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, but they're talking about specifically VR, like a virtual, would you want to do that thing where you've got a headset on and it's like you're in the crowd?
If there was literally, if there was literally no other way of me going, but it was, I wouldn't do it to replace going to a gig in any way.
But it's you'd have to get drunk. I mean, would you jump around in your own home just going,
that is the thing, isn't it? You can't really.
That's why I'm down on the sofa, or kind of chill out watching it kind of thing.
VR does give you a different perspective, because if you watch something on your screen, you're only getting the perspective of that one camera angle. If you have VR, you look up, you look side to side, that world is there. So it is different, and I'd be into that instead of just watching a flat thing.
And you won't get someone tall standing in front of you.
Why are you looking at me?
Sorry for
my superior genetics.
I did that as part of the experience.
That wasn't aimed at you. That was
you
just in
looked right at me when you said it. Oh man, justice for Lanks. Luke, do you want to take this next question?
Justice for Lanks. Sorry. Manandelia asks, Metal Hammer recently covered the metal scenes in the Caribbean. Is there a plan to look at other geographies hitherto unnoticed for their metal culture? Eleanor knows.
Yes, there is. Well, we're always looking at other scenes to cover from around the world, so let us know where you want us to go.
Absolutely.
But there is a documentary coming out towards the end of the year called Heavy Metal in Latin America, which is something we've already previewed briefly on the site. And it's going to look at Mexico, Chile, Argentina and Peru, and all different kinds of metal that's going on there, and how it intersects with the country's politics, and who is doing what, who the key players are in the scene, that kind of thing. So it's going to be a really interesting one.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Very, very proud to rep for metal across the world, and we will never, never, ever stop doing that. So wherever you're listening from, we got your back. And as Al said, come onto the Metal Hammer Readers Facebook group and tell us what places you'd like to hear more from, because we will get people out there and we'll tell you all about it.
In fact, go to the Facebook and check out Heavy Metal in Latin America, because there is a documentary page and there's all kinds of stuff that'll be going up there to keep you updated.
Sweet.
Michael Guy Perry asks, as it stands, I'm going solo to 2000 Trees this year, so I've decided to volunteer. That way I won't be totally Billy No Mates, plus it helps the festival out. Have any of you guys been to a festival alone, and how did you find it?
I have been to a festival alone before. I've been to I've been to tons of gigs by myself, and I actually went to Glastonbury last year by myself. I had some friends and family that were around that I could go and meet up with, but I was camped by myself, spent a lot of time kind of wandering around, and I thought it was really cool. And I think, you know, if you're at a festival, you are not going to be short of people who share some common interests that will want to hang out with you. So if you see Michael Perry at 2000 Trees, Give him a little pat on the head and take him for a beer.
And he's volunteering, you know.
That's really cool.
So, yeah, like I say, I've never been to a festival by myself. I've been to tons of gigs by myself, which I've got no problem with. My first ever download, I remember spending most of the Saturday by myself because Big Mosh.
What did you do on the Friday?
Yeah, exactly. I think I remember who we're watching now. I think it was like Blood Simple or someone on the main stage. And then,
fucking hell.
I know. And then basically Mosh Pit opened. Close again, and you look around and you go, oh, I've lost all my friends.
Yeah.
Wicked. And this was before you could just contact people, and there's no phone signal anywhere. So basically, I had to spend the next 8 hours by myself, just like, okay, fine, I guess I'll find them after Metallica.
You just reminded me, I did the exact same thing at Download 2006.
Yeah, that's the exact same one.
Because I lost people during Avenged Sevenfold, because they came on and smashed everyone. And I got my mobile was in my mate's backpack, so I didn't see them again until about 1 a.m. and I still had a great time.
Yeah, exactly. I remember talking to people, just wandering around. I did my first big crowd surf during Avenged by myself. It's like, come on, let's have a lovely time.
Amazing.
It was good. But yeah, there's no point, you know, if you're at a festival with loads of other people, you will find people to talk to.
You've
and
always
drink
got
with.
Friends in metal.
Exactly.
Always. That is it for this week's show. Lovely to have you back, Morten.
Oh, it's lovely to be here.
On next week's show, we will be reviewing that aforementioned Bruce Dickinson documentary. We will also be reviewing Epica. I'm going along to see Epica along with Mercury and Oceans of Slumber. That's a hell of a
good gig.
Oh, you're coming to that as well.
I'm coming too, yeah.
That's going to be good. Luke's going to see Winter Phillip to get him some British black metal.
In a church.
Freaking church. And we're all going to Andrew WK at the Forum. That's going to be subtle.
I'm so excited.
It's going to be great. So we'll be reviewing all of that next week. Don't forget that the Metal Hammer Tour kicks off in the UK next week. We already talked about the bands on the cover, Trivium, Code Orange, Power Trip and Venom Prison. At least a couple of dates have sold out now. I think Manchester sold out, one other has as well. So if you're around and you're thinking of going, get on tickets now because they are selling. It's not a line, that is literally what is happening. We will see you all next week. Don't forget to please rate and subscribe to us on iTunes so we can get up the charts. And yeah, have a good time, everyone. Stay metal and all of that.